What makes a man dress like a bat to fight crime? Since his 1939 debut, Batman has captivated audiences worldwide, becoming one of the most recognizable cultural icons of our time. Unlike Superman with his alien powers or Wonder Woman with her divine gifts, Batman remains stubbornly, fascinatingly human, a mortal who transformed childhood trauma into heroic purpose. Batman in Psychology by Travis Langley has become required reading in university psychology courses and a favorite among celebrities like Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman in the animated series, and filmmaker Kevin Smith, who praised it as the definitive psychological profile of The Dark Knight. The book's exploration of Batman's psyche reveals why this brooding vigilante continues to resonate across generations. He represents our primal desire to confront our fears and overcome them, to transform personal tragedy into something meaningful. The defining moment of Batman's existence occurs in a dark Gotham alley when young Bruce Wayne witnesses his parents' murder after a night at the movies. This traumatic event, which producer Michael Uslan calls a primal origin story, shapes everything that follows. Bruce swears by his parents' graves to wage war on all criminals, creating a mission born directly from trauma. Research confirms that losing parents is the most stressful common life event children can experience, especially when witnessed violently. Children who observe their parents' murders often develop post-traumatic stress symptoms, including flashbacks, anxiety, sleep disturbances, and haunting memories of their powerlessness during the event. When a child loses parents, their entire world is rewritten. Beyond the primary loss come cascading secondary losses, resources, familiar surroundings, routines, and increased responsibilities. Bereaved children often act out behaviorally since they lack adults' abstract thinking and verbal skills to express their feelings. Bruce Wayne never fully processes through Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's five stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. He immediately accepts the reality, channels anger into his mission, and makes a vengeful vow rather than bargaining for their return. Despite Batman's brooding nature and repeated mental replays of his parents' murder, he doesn't technically qualify for PTSD. Trauma alone doesn't constitute a disorder. The key question is whether his symptoms are maladaptive and prevent normal functioning. Batman doesn't avoid reminders of trauma, he actively seeks them out. His vigilance is appropriate to his chosen lifestyle rather than anxiety-driven. Most importantly, he doesn't meet the criterion of clinically significant impairment in functioning. He operates with exceptional competence as a vigilante, socialite, and philanthropist. Instead of succumbing to trauma, Bruce demonstrates remarkable resilience by transforming grief into purpose. Days after his parents' murder, he makes a bedside vow to wage war on crime, making meaning of trauma in days where it takes the rest of us several years. This future-oriented plan empowers him, replacing helplessness with purpose and a sense of capability. Batman isn't alone in transforming personal tragedy into lifelong mission. Real-world social superheroes similarly channel grief into activism that prevents others from suffering the same fate. They raise awareness, advocate for stricter laws, and sometimes pursue perpetrators directly, creating lasting change through their determination to prevent similar tragedies. Candace Lightner's story exemplifies this transformation. After her 13-year-old daughter Kari was killed by a repeat offense drunk driver who received only a light sentence, she founded Mothers Against Drunk Driving, MAD, in 1980. MAD's relentless advocacy led to the National Minimum Drinking Age Act of 1984 and contributed to reducing alcohol-related traffic deaths by over 50% since its founding. The organization now has over 400 chapters nationwide and has influenced over 1,000 drunk driving laws. John Walsh's tragic story began when his 6-year-old son Adam was abducted from a Florida department store in 1981. After Adam's murder, Walsh channeled his anguish into creating the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which has helped recover more than 375,000 missing children. He later hosted America's Most Wanted, directly contributing to the capture of over 1,200 fugitives and the recovery of 61 missing children. Holocaust survivors demonstrate perhaps the most profound examples of turning trauma into purpose. Elie Wiesel, who survived Auschwitz and Buchenwald, became a powerful voice against genocide through his memoir Night and countless speeches, earning the Nobel Peace Prize. Simon Wiesenthal, after surviving multiple concentration camps, dedicated his life to tracking down Nazi war criminals, helping to bring over 1,100 to justice, including Adolf Eichmann's capture. Christopher Nolan's comparison between Batman and Theodore Roosevelt reveals striking parallels in how personal loss can forge social crusaders. Roosevelt's devastating Valentine's Day of 1884, when he lost both his mother to typhoid fever and his wife Alice to kidney failure, could have broken him. His diary entry that day, "The light has gone out of my life," marked his lowest point. Yet he channeled this grief into remarkable public service, first as New York City Police Commissioner, where he tackled corruption head-on, walking beats at night to catch officers sleeping on duty, and later as President, where he championed conservation and trust-busting. While not all heroes emerge from trauma, some act purely from moral conviction or sense of duty, personal tragedy often provides the catalyst for extraordinary social action. The pattern seen in Bruce Wayne's evolution from traumatized child to Gotham's Dark Knight reflects a deeper truth about human resilience, the ability to transform profound loss into meaningful purpose. These real-world examples demonstrate how individuals can harness their pain to create positive change, building legacies that extend far beyond their personal suffering to benefit society as a whole. I wear a mask. And that mask, it's not to hide who I am, but to create what I am. Batman. Unlike his iconic decision to use a bat as his symbol, there's no famous moment when Bruce realizes he needs a mask. This decision evolved over more than a decade as he explored conventional paths, law enforcement, law school, FBI training, before concluding that operating within established systems would limit his effectiveness against Gotham's corruption. The mask serves psychological functions beyond concealing identity. Anonymity creates disinhibition, lessening of inhibitions, and de-individuation, reduced self-awareness, which can both help and hinder a vigilante. While the mask might make it harder for Batman to control his violence, it also helps him feel less pain and distraction, enhancing his awareness of his surroundings. The question of which identity is real, Batman or Bruce Wayne, divides experts. DC executive Dan DiDio claims the Batman persona is the true persona and Bruce Wayne is the mask. Michael Uslan believes Bruce Wayne died with his parents, while Paul Levitz argues Bruce remains the core identity. Batman wears two masks, the Dark Knight's cowl and Bruce Wayne's public facade. Each reduces consciousness of certain aspects of himself while heightening others. Perhaps the real Bruce emerges in the Batcave, with mask and gloves off, talking with Alfred and Robin. Batcave Bruce may be our hero at his truest. Batman's decision to fight crime as a masked vigilante reflects his cognitive and moral development. At the moment his parents died, Bruce was already Batman in essence, immediately grasping the meaning of their deaths and forming his life's goal and response. At 8 years old, he was old enough to understand death's permanence and wrongness, but young enough that his thinking hadn't developed the complexities that might have deterred him from his seemingly impossible oath. His fantasy of avenging his parents grew alongside his developing logic, becoming a frame of reference through which he practiced each new reasoning skill, embedding his mission into the very structure of his thinking. As he reached adolescence and developed formal operations, he gained the ability to use hypothetico-deductive reasoning, becoming a master detective able to generate hypotheses and deduce information about past crimes and future criminal plans. Bruce Wayne's fear of bats originated when he fell into a cavern beneath his family's property as a child. terrified by the swarm of bats that boiled from the blackness, flapping, beating, clawing. This traumatic experience forever linked shadows with danger in his mind. After his parents' murder, instead of running from these fears, he chose to embrace them, cloaking himself in darkness. As he tells Alfred in Batman Begins, "Bats frighten me. It's time my enemies shared my dread." This approach demonstrates a perfect example of exposure therapy, facing one's fears directly until anxiety naturally subsides. By returning to the cave where his bat phobia began and standing tall as bats swarm around him, Bruce literally confronts his deepest fear and masters it. Batman's intimidation tactics serve multiple purposes: deterring criminals, impairing their fighting ability, causing them to abandon allies, driving some from Gotham, extracting information, punishing wrongdoers, and satisfying his own need to hurt those who hurt others. However, fear proves less effective than positive motivation. It changes attitudes more readily than behaviors, and strong deterrents work quickly, but mild ones last longer. The Joker, recognizing Batman's use of terror tactics, sees a kindred spirit and aims to prove that civilized people will turn on each other when frightened enough. He creates scenarios forcing people to reveal their true colors, manipulating both criminals and citizens through fear. However, the Joker's theory proves wrong when two boatloads of terrified people refuse to blow each other up, demonstrating that humans can resist destructive impulses even under extreme duress. Batman's fundamental assumption that criminals are a superstitious, cowardly lot deserves scrutiny. Many criminals demonstrate poor problem-solving skills and difficulty applying logic, but cowardly? Research suggests the opposite. Nervous, fearful individuals commit fewer crimes. Low fear of punishment reduces the effectiveness of deterrence, predisposing fearless individuals like extroverts and psychopaths to take risks. The Joker and Bane demonstrate abnormal deficiencies in ability to feel fear. Batman's arrival in Gotham spawns a proliferation of costumed criminals whose theatrical antics rival his own. These villains aren't simply thieves. They seek excitement, challenges, and attention that quiet crimes can't provide. Their extreme behaviors transcend everyday criminality, combining elements of both serial and spree crimes with occasional mass murder mixed in. The Joker, for instance, orchestrates elaborate schemes that blend performance art with terrorism, while Two-Face's crimes follow an obsessive pattern dictated by chance and duality. Batman's enemies exhibit deeply ingrained personality disorders, characteristic patterns of behavior that define who they are. Unlike temporary conditions like depression or PTSD, these trait disorders resist medication and change because the individuals lack insight into their own problems. Most show symptoms from childhood, like the Penguin's social isolation due to his appearance and the Riddler's compulsive need to prove his intellectual superiority. Scarecrow's childhood trauma of bullying evolved into an obsession with fear, while Poison Ivy's environmental extremism stems from a profound disconnection with humanity. The Cluster B personality disorders, antisocial, borderline, narcissistic, and histrionic, all display psychopathic qualities, including lack of empathy. The Joker exemplifies antisocial personality disorder with his complete disregard for social norms and others' rights. Harley Quinn demonstrates borderline traits through her intense, unstable relationships and identity disturbance. These disorders become less prevalent in old age, possibly due to the maturation hypothesis, where individuals slowly learn to manage their behaviors. However, this apparent decline might also result from higher mortality rates among those with these disorders due to dangerous activities, violence, suicide attempts, or simply reduced ability to act on their impulses as they age. Some villains commit crimes purely for thrills. Sensation-seeking, the need for varied, novel, and complex sensations and experiences, and the willingness to take physical and social risks explains why Batman's enemies pursue excitement through crime. Catwoman's high-risk heists and Riddler's elaborate puzzles demonstrate this need for stimulation. Psychologist Marvin Zuckerman identified four components: thrill and adventure-seeking, dangerous physical activities, experience-seeking, novelty and nonconformity, disinhibition, uninhibited social activities like wearing masks, and boredom susceptibility, aversion to routine. Mr. Freeze's scientific experiments and Poison Ivy's eco-terrorism reflect this complex mix of motivations. Gotham's costumed criminals transcend common criminality by transforming themselves into dangerous celebrities who make the world their playground. They create spectacular personas, much like professional performers, Madonna, Lady Gaga, or Kiss, who reinvent themselves for stardom. Through masks, makeup, and theatrical elements, they escape mundane reality to become living legends, regardless of the cost to others. The Penguin's sophisticated criminal empire and public persona as a legitimate businessman, or the Riddler's transformation from petty criminal to criminal mastermind, demonstrate how these villains craft their images to achieve notoriety while satisfying their psychological needs. Some villains commit crimes purely for thrills. Sensation-seeking, the need for varied, novel, and complex sensations and experiences, and the willingness to take physical and social risks, explains why Batman's enemies pursue excitement through crime. Catwoman's high-risk heists and Riddler's elaborate puzzles demonstrate this need for stimulation. Psychologist Marvin Zuckerman identified four components: thrill and adventure-seeking, dangerous physical activities, experience-seeking, novelty and nonconformity, disinhibition, uninhibited social activities like wearing masks, and boredom susceptibility, aversion to routine. Mr. Freeze's scientific experiments and Poison Ivy's eco-terrorism reflect this complex mix of motivations. Gotham's costumed criminals transcend common criminality by transforming themselves into dangerous celebrities who make the world their playground. They create spectacular personas, much like professional performers, Madonna, Lady Gaga, or Kiss, who reinvent themselves for stardom. Through masks, makeup, and theatrical elements, they escape mundane reality to become living legends, regardless of the cost to others. The Penguin's sophisticated criminal empire and public persona as a legitimate businessman, or the Riddler's transformation from petty criminal to criminal mastermind, demonstrate how these villains craft their images to achieve notoriety while satisfying their psychological needs. Arkham Asylum, officially the Elizabeth Arkham Asylum for the Criminally Insane, houses Gotham's criminals deemed legally insane. Named after H.P. Lovecraft's fictional witch-cursed, legend-haunted town, this facility suffers constant escapes, riots, and infiltrations. Its fundamental problems are threefold. Inmates run the asylum, inmates escape the asylum, and the staff hired to run it often belong inside it themselves. The asylum can actually create villains, as with white-collar criminal Warren White, who entered sane, merely faking mental illness to avoid prison, but emerged as the deranged Great White Shark after being mutilated by other inmates. This transformation from ordinary criminal to supervillain exemplifies Arkham's corrupting influence. Insanity is a legal standard, not a medical diagnosis, excusing criminal responsibility for those lacking rational awareness of their actions. The modern insanity defense originated with the 1843 M. Naughton case, establishing the right-wrong test, requiring evidence that mental disease prevented understanding the wrongness of one's actions. After public outrage over John Hinckley's acquittal for attempting to assassinate President Reagan, many states adopted guilty but mentally ill verdicts, requiring treatment followed by incarceration. Most Arkham residents appear to have been found not guilty by reason of insanity, explaining why villains like Two-Face can be released during periods of sanity despite their crimes. In reality, most of Batman's enemies wouldn't qualify as criminally insane. Even Jeffrey Dahmer, despite his horrific crimes, was found legally sane because he understood his actions were wrong and concealed them. Psychologist Bradley Daniels suggests Gotham's commitment criteria seem based on whether criminals wear costumes and have themed compulsions rather than actual mental health standards. Arkham's treatment approaches are questionable at best. Therapists talk extensively without following clear therapeutic models. They rarely seem to use medication effectively. Residents remain alert and ready for breakouts rather than showing signs of appropriate psychiatric treatment. Some therapists favor outdated Freudian and Jungian approaches, despite their questionable effectiveness with psychotic patients. More effective approaches like skills training, cognitive behavioral therapy, and symptom management are rarely seen.
Batman never sets out to recruit partners. They choose him. Each Robin has been a youngster with skills to combat crime and personal grievances against evildoers. The narrative function of Robin was initially practical. Bill Finger, tired of writing Batman's thought balloons, wanted to give the hero someone to talk to. As Finger explained, Batman needed a Watson to talk to. Without a partner, Batman remains silent and more violent, seeming distant to both criminals and readers. Robin provides the balance that reveals Batman's nature while maintaining his mystique. Through Robin, Batman vicariously experiences wish fulfillment by helping the boy achieve what young Bruce had only wished for, starting with closure. He helps each Robin get the justice young Bruce didn't receive, provides the mentorship he himself lacked, offers a father figure who's not on the payroll, and lets them enjoy their youth more than he did. Each Robin resembles Bruce Wayne as a newly orphaned boy, reminding Batman why he fights crime, to prevent others from suffering what he endured. This identification connects Bruce to his inner child, before, during, and after his parents' deaths. As Tim Drake observes, he needs Robin to remember what he used to be, before his parents died. While Dick reminds Bruce of his 8-year-old self, the other Robins often remind Bruce of Dick Grayson, creating a legacy where younger brothers feel they must live up to the first Robin's example. Alfred Adler's concept of birth order influences personality development in the Bat family. Every Robin begins as an only child before joining Batman's family. The middle-born child, like Jason Todd, often feels like the neglected birth order after his return to Gotham. He displays characteristics researchers observe in middle children: more jealousy, less healthy self-esteem, and less affiliation with family. Tim becomes the middle son when Damian arrives, prompting Tim to become Red Robin and strike out independently. As the youngest, Damian feels insecure about his position, resenting the others and asserting his status as Bruce's biological son. Batman struggles with intimacy, keeping his guard up as both Bruce Wayne and Batman. Erickson's intimacy versus isolation stage explains his oscillation between seeking companionship and isolating himself from others. Healthy relationships develop through reciprocal self-disclosure. Partners gradually reveal more about themselves as trust builds. But Batman's monumental secret creates an imbalance in his relationships. When he finally reveals, "I'm Batman," the other person has nothing comparable to share in return. While some find revealing their true identity liberating, Batman's habit of secrecy runs too deep. His relationships repeatedly fail because he cannot fully open up, creating an insurmountable barrier to true intimacy. Research reveals more about bad boys' appeal than bad girls. While bad boys are defined by rebellious behavior and antisocial actions, bad girls are typically defined by sexual expressiveness. Batman's female interests aren't promiscuous, but share his affinity for darkness and danger. Catwoman tells Batman, "We're not afraid of the dark, we come alive in it." Women may be attracted to bad boys hoping to reform them, though neither Talia nor Selina want a gentler Batman. The danger and challenge bad boys represent increases their appeal through psychological mechanisms like cognitive dissonance and excitation transfer. Comic scholar Peter Coogan argues that Batman is attracted to women who remind him of himself, either society women like Bruce Wayne or versions of Batman like Catwoman. Despite the popular notion that opposites attract, research consistently shows people prefer similarity in relationships. Batman has more in common with female criminals like Talia and Selina than with heroes, as he believes, "Deep down, I'm not a good person." He's drawn to bad girls who share his darkness, but rejects truly evil women like husband-murdering Jillian Maxwell. Between Selina Kyle and Talia al Ghul, Bruce shows greater commitment to Selina. While he shares a son with Talia, their relationship remains entangled with her father's criminal empire. With Selena, he dates, shares quiet moments, and repeatedly falls in love across multiple timelines and continuities, making Catwoman Batman's true love story. The final question remains, is Batman mentally ill? After examining various perspectives through decades of storytelling and psychological analysis, the conclusion is clear. Bruce Wayne doesn't qualify for diagnoses of psychosis, PTSD, multiple personality disorder, or obsessive-compulsive disorder. While he exhibits traits that might superficially resemble these conditions, they don't meet clinical thresholds. Batman lives in a deeply corrupt world where conventional approaches to fighting crime would fail. A Gotham City where police are compromised, politicians are bought, and supernatural threats are real. His methods, while extreme, represent a rational response to his circumstances, much like how soldiers or emergency responders develop intense focus and seemingly unusual coping mechanisms. His obsession doesn't qualify as mental illness any more than the passionate dedication of activists or revolutionaries who fight against great odds. Consider his methodical approach to training, his maintenance of complex relationships with allies, and his ability to function as both Bruce Wayne and Batman, all indicating someone in control of his faculties. Even his choice to dress as a bat, often cited as evidence of instability, represents a calculated decision to use symbolism and fear as tactical advantages. Despite his haunted nature, Batman represents heroism, someone who channels trauma into productive action. In a world filled with corruption, magic, and monsters, his approach is uniquely effective. As the author notes, in a crisis, who's going to fall apart first, him or you? Could anyone else face the horrors he encounters and manage the complexities of his life any better than he? No. His preparation and psychological resilience have repeatedly proven superior to even superpowered heroes in crisis situations. Bruce's greatest challenges often emerge in his role as a father figure, especially as his adopted sons grow into adults. Having lost his parents young and been raised partly by Alfred, he relates better to children than grown sons, a dynamic clearly seen in his interactions with young Dick Grayson versus the adult Nightwing. When Dick Grayson and Tim Drake mature, Bruce's attempts to give them independence are perceived as rejection, reflecting his own struggles with attachment and authority. The complex dynamics with Jason Todd, including his death and resurrection, further highlight Bruce's difficulties in balancing protection with empowerment. Following a period when everyone thought him dead, Bruce returns reinvigorated, accepting his son's new roles and establishing Batman Inc., showing growth toward generativity rather than stagnation. This global initiative demonstrates his evolution from lone vigilante to mentor and leader, focusing on leaving a legacy and guiding the next generation of heroes. This transformation reflects healthy psychological development rather than pathology. Batman's evolution continues to reflect our cultural needs and anxieties. After the dark, deconstructionist comics of the 1980s and the campy film adaptations of the 1990s, post-9/11 America needed heroes again, leading to character rehabilitations while still exploring moral complexity. Modern interpretations, from Christopher Nolan's films to contemporary comics, show Batman wrestling with questions of justice, sacrifice, and the limits of individual action. The Dark Knight remains compelling because he represents our desire to confront our fears, to transform trauma into purpose, and to believe that one person can make a difference against seemingly insurmountable odds. All without superpowers, just extraordinary human determination and resourcefulness.